Good morning from 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. And welcome to our election special candidates forum. As each Saturday this month, we speak to one candidate vying for the Democratic nomination for congressperson from Virginia's 5th District. The program is underwritten by the Daily Progress with support from Rebecca's Natural Food and Hamilton's at First and Main. Now here are your hosts, Bob McAdams and Jeff Leonard.
Good morning. I'm Jeff Leonard, General Manager of 94.7 WPVC.
And I'm Bob McAdams, Special Events Coordinator at WPVC.
Today we're co-hosting a WPVC Election Event Special, one of four interviews each with Democratic candidate for Congress from the 5th District of Virginia. Keep in mind, WPVC does not endorse any candidate for public office. We provide this information to help our listeners choose the best candidate. And you, our listeners, are helping us by submitting your questions.
With us in the studio this morning is congressional candidate Andrew Sneathern. Andrew, welcome to WPVC.
Thank you guys for having me.
Andrew, well, let's get started, and we'll get started by getting to know a little bit about you. Where were you born, and what was your life like as you grew up?
I grew up in southeast Missouri. I grew up in a little town called East Prairie, Missouri, of about 3,000 people. And the town was almost exclusively farming. And so I grew up working on a family farm. It's a farm that my family's farmed for about five generations. And my mother still farms that ground today that I grew up on. And my sister, Kenna Brandt, who taught here at Greenbrier for many years in Charlottesville, moved back recently and helps farm the ground there to this day. Gosh, growing up was, every single day we worked on the farm, and then we came and we all got together at my grandparents' house, and everything we ate came from the garden, from my grandfather's garden, and it was a real family affair.
From that early experience, you went into your education, where you're starting to make your choices. How have your education and your working career prepared you to be a member of Congress?
I have a Bachelor of Science in Economics. And I think that always is useful. It's certainly useful when you look at the rural economy. I'm also an attorney, and I think practicing law helps in many ways. And I'm a trial attorney. I've been both a prosecutor and a defense attorney. And I think anytime you're in court making arguments, speaking on behalf of others, that is a great thing to have in a congressperson. My hope is that I'd get to be the voice of the people of the 5th District, and being an advocate for them, I'd be an advocate for them the same way that I've been an advocate my whole career.
You're listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. We are conducting a special candidate forum for the 5th District, and again, I'm Jeff Leonard, sitting here with Andrew Sneathern. Andrew, what have you been doing in the 5th District in recent years to set your candidacy apart from the others?
Well, it's funny because I never really thought about that I'd be running for this type of office. So I've never really done anything with the intent of setting myself apart. But there are things that I care about, and so those are the things where I've spent my time. For example, I've volunteered with a local nonprofit, the CIC, that helps folks get back on their feet. I've volunteered to help them get through after. Perhaps they've been through the criminal justice system and get back on their feet. I was a prosecutor, as I've said, and one of the things I prosecuted and I cared most deeply about was domestic violence and sexual assault. And even after I stopped prosecuting those cases in particular, I would volunteer, for example, at the women's clinic at UVA to advise folks who had found themselves in difficult situations. I've also worked on the board of One Virginia 2021, which is a statewide nonprofit, and it's there are both Democrats and Republicans on that board to end political gerrymandering.
You know, you touched on this a little bit. One of my friends ran for Congress in South Carolina, and he was writing a book. It says, "I ran for Congress, and all I got was this lousy bankruptcy." So running for Congress is a huge deal and a lot of sacrifice, both professionally, personally, family. Why did you decide to run?
I am scared to death for a future being led by Tom Garrett and this, what I see as an extremely selfish ideology. I've got two little boys, Larissa and I have Dylan and Jackson, and I really don't want to look them in the eye a decade from now and tell them that I didn't stand up when I thought that our country was in jeopardy. And so really it has to do with them. And when you look at this district, I live in Charlottesville. I love Charlottesville and Albemarle. But this district is primarily rural, and that's the background I come from. And I believe that I give us a chance to win this district against Tom Garrett. He thinks he can't lose. It was district. This district was gerrymandered really to give him an advantage. And the advantage he's counting on is that somebody can't go to Pennsylvania or Charlotte County and or Halifax or all the other rural counties in this district and take votes away from him. And I think think this district belongs to the people of the 5th District, and I think that I can go speak to them and take votes away from him.
You're listening to 94.7 WPVC's 5th District Congressional Candidate Forum. I'm Bob McAdams, and with us in the studio today is Andrew Sneathern. Andrew, a top issue for all the candidates is health care. Straight off, do you believe that health care is a right? And if so, how do you propose to make health care a reality for all the people?
So I do believe healthcare is a right, but more than just a right, and I've been saying this, I believe it's an obligation. I believe it's an obligation that each of us owe to one another in this country. We owe it to people who are suffering, people who are worried that they can't make their house payment or their insurance payment that month. And it's not okay that I have friends who have lost health insurance and have to cancel an oncology appointment, have to suffer and worry about that. And so it occurs to me in this country that people say to me, how can we afford to expand Medicare, which is the plan that I support? And by the year 2023, it's estimated that the per capita cost of healthcare is going to be close to $15,000 per person. How in the world can we not expand health care to make it affordable for everyone when we're spending twice as much per capita as other industrialized nations? We're already paying a cost, a tremendous cost. And that's money that people could be using for all kinds of things, including entrepreneurial behavior that would grow this economy rather than be a drag on it.
So you grew up in, and I asked Ben this last week, you grew up in an agricultural area, and you probably saw firsthand individuals who tended to vote more conservative rather than not, and sometimes were voting against their own best economic and health care interests by voting for individuals who did not support universal health care, did not support expanded Medicaid, did not support a public option, and they were just going to leave it to the public market, to the free market. What do you say to them that to try to convince them to say, hey, if you try something different, maybe you'll get a different result?
Well, first of all, I hate the idea of saying that people vote against their self-interest, because I think there's arch is a little bit because I grew up there. And even if that's true, I think there's a little condescension in that statement in and of itself, which is probably something that sets me apart. But what I would say is people are constantly fed this ideology of the free market is the end all be all. And there are a couple of problems with that when it comes to healthcare in particular. I can't think of a single other good or service that we purchase that before we purchase it, we don't know what it's going to cost. And the second thing is people, when they're facing something like, let's say an appendectomy, they don't make a decision based on financial, resources. They're making a decision based on life and death. And so they're not making they may be making a decision that's really good for them personally, but it's really horrible in their health, but personally for their finances, it's terrible because it may end up with them in bankruptcy, and it happens every day in this country. And so, what I would say is we have to go to people and say, we have to look at this entirely differently. We have to look at this as coming from our values, and our values are to take care of each and every member of our community and remember that every member of our community has value and that when they're suffering, that we're all diminished by that suffering and no more so than with healthcare.
We have a question from a listener in Charlottesville about another important issue, and that's the economy. In America, the richest country in history, the top 1% own most of the wealth, while more than 45 million Americans are living below the poverty line. Good jobs are being automated and people being replaced by machines and computers at the same time that corporations are earning record profits. How do you define the problems with the economy and what should Congress do about it?
Well, I think the problems with the economy are driven by the fact that the Republican Party has built a tax base or a tax plan that's an attack on the middle class. Most people in this country don't, and certainly not in the 5th District, don't make most of their money off of the 401ks or even have money in the stock market. Most people are trying to live and survive this month or next month. And a tax policy that really, at its core, is a handout to the wealthiest corporations who, believe me, what these corporations have done is taken and not invested back into the economy. We are in a sick system where it's easier for them to purchase influence with Congress people, and it's more effective for their bottom line at the corporate level than it is to reinvest in their businesses. And so I think we have to work to take money out of Congress as much as we can. And we have, and that's one of the main reasons I'm on One Virginia 2021's board, or have been, because I think that's one way to circumscribe the power of Congress and get them to working back for the people of their district rather than the corporations that drove this tax policy.
When people look at the economy here, that economic and income inequality, there's some great books about it, are signs of or causes of all kinds of social dysfunctions. How would you address the economic and income inequality?
Well, I think that we have to fight like crazy for the middle class. We have to fight for policies that reinvest in our communities that have lost so much. There's this ideology or this belief that if you give corporations more money, that they'll spend it by reinvesting, and that has not been the case. Categorically, it has not been the case. And so what we have to do is, through our tax policy, we have to use the federal government to encourage behavior that we want to see. Entrepreneurial behavior, for example, in green energy and technology. I'll give you an example I think about a lot. In Danville, you'll see that there are historic tax credits that are being used to encourage for-profit businesses to go in there and reinvest. And Tom Garrett's in a pickle here, because the reality is that the free market would not do those things on its own, but they are going to be vastly, it's going to be a vastly better economy once those investments are made and people have jobs and in that arena. And so it's not just the free market by itself. We have to have tax policies. We have to have federal policies that encourage entrepreneurial behavior throughout our district.
Would you be in favor of increasing the minimum wage?
I absolutely would be. And I would be in favor of tying it to inflation, so that we don't have to have this discussion every single time we talk about the minimum wage not being a livable wage.
It does become a bargaining chip time and time again. You're listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, our 5th district candidate forum. I think Bob's got a question about education.
Now, the education system that we have fails for some, it succeeds for others. Some are succeeding very well. What are you hearing from students and teachers about the problems that they're facing, and how can Congress help them?
Well, I can tell you one of the ways not to help them is to attack our teachers who are already underpaid by taking away a small tax credit that they have. I thought that was one of the most cruel things I've ever heard. Both my sisters are elementary education teachers, and I just couldn't imagine that the Republican Party thought that was a reasonable way to approach what to me is some of the most important parts of our country. One of the places where I think we can make vast improvements, and this was brought to me by a friend, Ty Cooper, here in Charlottesville, is early childhood education. I'm always thinking about, as a legislator, how do we allocate resources in the most efficient way? And he said to me, I'm your friend, but I will not support your candidacy if you don't get right on this issue. Because there's, by the time a child reaches 4 or 5 years old, if they're behind, for whatever reason, they haven't had parents that can be involved, they're in difficult family situations, it is extremely costly to get them caught back up. But having universal early childhood education is a great equalizer. And then there aren't the opportunity costs at that point when a teacher is teaching and helping the 4 or 5 or 6 kids in a class of 20 that haven't been able to catch up. There's an opportunity cost there. And so I think early childhood education is a great place to invest. And we get a large bang for our buck on that. The other place is that it's not just four-year degrees that are the answer. It is a broader education in the job market that's in demand. And I think PVCC and other job training schools like that are at the cusp and are extremely agile and able to change very quickly to the changing market. And so I think that we ought to be having a reverence for the trades, especially in green energy and technology and the areas that are in high demand. And that would be a great place to spend our resources, both federally and at the state level.
Now, most school districts are funded through the local property tax. They get some support from the state. Not a whole lot's coming from Congress at this time.
No.
How can we fix that? What proportion should be the Congress be responsible for?
We do have, so Congress, the way I think of this is we can incentivize the behavior we want to see. And so through block grants, through education grants, but you're absolutely right. I think the tax, the way that we decide to pay for our education is really absurd. And I don't have an easy answer for that. I wish I did at the federal level.
There are not often easy answers.
No, I know.
You know, in the 1 minute we have before break, the president of the United States believes it is a good idea to issue firearms to teachers. Can you give me about a minute on what your idea is on that?
I'm absolutely appalled. I can't imagine. Look, in all honesty, I think that our president is putting, with something like that, the lives of our children at risk. Our teachers, we ask so much of them already. There is absolutely no reason to ask of them to be the police over children and to protect those children. What they should do is educate those children. That should not be their job. And I really think that this is another way that he is trying to hold up a shiny object and get people talking about something while he obliterates education and education funding and while he obliterates the economy.
You're listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, and our 5th District election special. Our guest today is Andrew Sneedlerin. You're listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Today we have the 5th District Candidate Congressional Forum. Our guest is Andrew Sneedlerin.
I'm Bob McAdams, and here with Jeff Leonard, we're hosting this election special interview. The issues that we're discussing, well, they don't get any easier, Andrew, including this question from a listener in the Charlottesville area. The earth is warming, ice caps melting, sea levels rising. We're getting unprecedented tropical storms, floods, and extreme heat. Climate change is happening to us daily, and the future looks worse. What is your comprehensive plan to reduce climate change?
Well, let me say that I really do believe that climate change is one of the greatest existential crises, not only to our country, but to the world. One of the things that has disappointed me most in this administration is that we have completely removed ourselves from the leadership in the world on this issue. And you're exactly right talking about the the ways that it impacts us. But one of the other ways it impacts us is that there will be large migrations of people leaving areas. There will be wars. There will be costs in every way. So what we have to do is look at Paris. Why in the world did we remove ourselves from an accord that was entered into by all the industrialized nations of the world? So what we have to do is reinsert ourselves in the leadership role in this. And comprehensively, here in the United States, we have to invest in clean energy and technology. We have to reduce our use of CO2, and we have to lead the world in that. And I want to also say it is not a real choice. It is a false choice to say that we have to choose between jobs and reducing our CO2 levels. Just like any other arena, it will take investment. It will take a real investment. But if we do that, then we will have jobs for the future. And many of those will be here in the 5th District through like Apex Energy and Segura Solar. And so if we train and educate and do the investment in those, we can reap the benefit for many generations to come.
Here's another tough question. The Black Lives Matter movement and the events in Charlottesville in July and August of last summer confront us with racism in our society. What should be the response personally and legislatively in order to finally overcome racism?
That is really a tough question for me personally. I was there on the 12th, and what I saw was very, very difficult and upsetting personally. What we have to understand is we're not talking about racism from 200 years ago. We're talking about systematic and institutional biases that we have currently. African Americans are more likely to be stopped by the police. They're more likely to get charged more severely. They are less likely to have as good of a defense. They are less likely to receive as good offers in settlement. And this is borne out again and again. Even here in Charlottesville, in a six-month period, there was 101 stop and frisks. 71 of those stop and frisks were African Americans. We have 19% of our population are African Americans. We have to hold a mirror up to ourselves first and foremost and recognize our own internal biases. And it's a difficult and tough thing. But if we're not going to do it in the wake of what happened here in Charlottesville, I don't know when in the world we'd do it. And so my approach to this is and always has been in the criminal justice system, we have to have much more equitable treatment. And years ago, I started a rural drug court because we were pushing this three strikes, you're out business, and we were literally throwing away the key for particularly young African Americans who were addicts and by no other measure were criminal. And so I just didn't think that that was okay. And we have to have more approaches like that. I could go on and on about this issue, but I know there are other questions and important issues to get to, so I'll be quiet there.
I'd like to follow up on that a little bit, just because it's of interest. When you are both a prosecutor and a defense attorney, you know, you alluded to the disproportionate minority contact. What was your thought then, and what did you do to try to help that?
Well, as a prosecutor, the day-to-day was so difficult in terms of how many cases come in. My approach was to treat every person as a human being. Even if people are, and this comes from those basic values that I talked about earlier, that every person has value, which is why I started that drug court. Because, and I will tell you, in the very conservative community that I grew up in, people didn't like at first when I started this drug court. They looked at me like I was a little bit crazy. But I said to them, these are your brothers and your sisters and people that you know. And you know, you can get your pound of flesh if we're not successful. But if we are successful, then we'll keep somebody from being shackled with being a felon for the rest of their life. And we'll give them the tools they need to not only get off their addiction, but be successful here in their community again with jobs. And So that's the approach I took, both as a prosecutor and as a defense attorney, was to look at every single person as a human being. And it's interesting to me that, and it's right that we should be so very concerned about the opioid epidemic, but now we're going to have tons of money thrown into this at this point, where for generations, when young African Americans were facing the same addiction issues, we threw away the key.
You're listening to 94.7 WPVC's 5th District Congressional Candidate Forum. I'm Jeff Leonard, and here in studio is Andrew Sneetherin. Andrew, another hard question. Gun violence takes a terrible toll on America. The school shooting in Parkland, Florida, enraged the students who are clearly and forcefully demanding that legislators pass common-sense gun laws. What gun laws, what new gun laws do you support in Congress, and will you refuse to accept campaign donations or support from the National Rifle Association?
I absolutely will refuse to accept support from the NRA. In fact, I think of myself as probably the NRA's worst nightmare. I am a lifelong gun owner. I grew up on a farm. I've hunted my entire life, and I don't believe that the NRA represents me or other reasonable gun owners. My earliest memories with my dad are being carried into a duck blind on his shoulders. I've used guns my entire life. And I've taught my boys how to use guns safely. But specifically, I think that the first thing we should do is to make it illegal to manufacture, possess, transport, and make it criminally so if you change anything that's a semi-automatic weapon into behaving like an automatic weapon. And the second thing is to reduce the capacity to deliver rounds at large amounts. We have limited large capacity magazines previously, and we should do it again. It makes no sense to me that for my entire life I've hunted and been limited to 3 shotgun shells when I'm duck hunting or rabbit hunting, and every person that's a sports person has accepted that, but we don't accept it when it's rounds that are intended for killing people. That makes no sense to me whatsoever. There are a whole host of other things that I would support, but that'd be a great place to start with reducing the amount of rounds that are intended to kill people.
You know, another issue that affects young people and is of particular interest to the 94.7. By the way, this is 94.7 WPVC, the Progressive Voice of Charlottesville. I'm Jeff Leonard, hosting with Bob McAdams, a 5th District Congressional Candidate Forum. Our guest today is Andrew Sneetherin, candidate for the Democratic nomination for the 5th District. Another issue is that affects young people is immigration. You know, 94.7 is 21 hours a week in Spanish, so this is a very important issue to us. People brought to America as children had protection from deportation under President Obama. President Trump has taken away that protection. What would you do to help keep the Dreamers here, and where do you stand on immigration law in general?
Well, I can tell you what I wouldn't do. I wouldn't enter into a short-term kick the can down the road on the budget and trade away the Dreamers to do it. And so I support the Dreamers, and I think it comes from just this basic understanding that through their own no fault of their own, that they are here and they in every way have joined the fabric of the United States, and that we would eliminate them from us. Honestly, it gets back to this utterly selfish ideology for me that's being taught by the right. Basically, what they're saying is, if your life has problems, we're looking around for others to blame for your problems. And there's no better example of it than this. And that's exactly what I think the Trump administration is doing. They're trying to divide us and to do it on the with Dreamers is unimaginable to me. The second thing is, I think we have to have a comprehensive immigration strategy, and one that's not based in racism. And I'm afraid that's where we are at this point.
You're listening to 94.7 WPVC's 5th District Congressional Candidate Forum. I'm Bob McAdams. Andrew, the Me Too movement is unmasking the abuse of power that some have used to extort sexual favors. Some men who controlled the future of women in their lives And at the same time, a woman's right to make her own reproductive choices is being challenged, and women still are often paid less than men for the same job. What should Congress do to protect the rights of women?
I think the first thing that we should do is have a law passed that addresses equal pay. Anyone, women or others, who are doing the same job should be paid equally. And to not do so should be illegal. And so that would be the place where I would start. When you talk about the Me Too movement, I think it's important to understand that this is about, you know, I have an extraordinary reverence for the Constitution. I have it with me all the time. I use it whenever I'm doing closing arguments. And the basis of the first 10 amendments is really that everyone in this country should be treated equally. And we are, with 51% of our population, not living up to our highest ideals. And it saddens me. And with the issue of Me Too in particular, it is difficult for me that we lost Al Franken in the Senate. But any time that someone is using, and I'm not saying he necessarily was, but any time a person is using their status or their power to hold it over another person because they know that person won't be able to stand up and say something because the cost will be too great, and they do so for sexual gratification, and they do so, and this particularly happens to women on a daily basis. It's a denigration of their self-worth, and I think we have to have a hard line on that and not accept it. And it's not an easy thing as Democrats, because we don't want to lose giants of liberalism, but I think we have to hold ourselves to a higher standard, and I hope we can do that.
Would you support passage of the Equal Rights Amendment?
Absolutely. Not only that, but I take my son and we fill out postcards and mail them to local legislators to try to get that done. So I do that regularly. Thank you.
We've got more tough questions. The Trump administration has proposed an infrastructure bill that has no real funds. They're depending on private investment and private ownership. What is your plan to rebuild and strengthen our nation's infrastructure? And where do you stand on privatization of public functions?
I'm thinking about this question. So, you know, here's what's funny about this to me. I think everyone would say that the interstate highway system in this country has been one of the things that created one of the greatest advantages that this country had economically and for ultimately its tax base. That wouldn't have happened. That simply wouldn't have happened under a purely free market system. We have to have a combination of incentive-based behaviors by our federal government. And so I think it is high time that we have an infrastructure investment from this country, and it has to come from a combination and be spurred on by federal policy and money. And it is, like any investment, we're going to expect a return on that investment. But I was talking about, I think I was talking earlier in this interview about Danville and South Boston, and those investments that are happening because of historic tax credits, that combination between private and public monies just simply wouldn't happen, or it wouldn't happen for a long, long time without money being put in by the people.
You're listening to 94.7 WPVC's 5th Congressional District Candidate Forum. We're speaking with Andrew Sneathern today. American presidents serve as commander-in-chief and head of state, but only Congress is supposed to declare war. They haven't done that, realized that function for a long time. But with Donald Trump's erratic behavior and plans for greatly increased military spending, including new nuclear weapons, many people fear that he will start a nuclear war. If elected, what will you do to prevent that from happening?
Well, first, I do think that is a very real concern. His behavior becomes more and more erratic every day. And I think there should be a real concern that he would do anything to divert attention away from his failing presidency. And so I think it is a real problem. I also think that it would be, I do think that over the last couple of decades, the Congress has ceded a great deal of its authority because they didn't want to make these tough decisions, unfortunately. And lastly, I will say, and so I think that, that Congress has to step up and be more active in those decisions. But lastly, you know, one of 435 Congress people, I it is difficult, and I think it will be the height of hubris to think that I would do any one thing by myself. So it would take a group of Congress people to circumscribe the president's power in that way. And so I don't want to say that I, one person, would have anything to do that would stop that individually. It would be a group of folks who care more about this country and about its future than we do about gaining any sort of political benefit at the moment.
No, Andrew, I think you're right when you say that Congress has avoided, has ceded a lot of power to the presidency to avoid making hard decisions. If you're put in a position where you're asked by the Democratic Party and the leadership of the House to do what is right for the for them over what is right for your constituents, what's your answer going to be?
My answer is going to be that I am there as the voice of the people of the 5th District. I remember when Tom Perriello voted for the ACA, and the after effects of that were that, that his constituents, many of them extremely conservative, who had been given, you know, been listening constantly to Limbaugh and the other right-wing stations, came out, and Tom actually showed up. I remember in Appomattox, he showed up, and people were angry. But he spoke to them directly, and it very well may have cost him the election in 2010. But he courageously did what he thought was most effective and beneficial to the members of this community. But he also went to those constituents who weren't happy with him and talked to them face to face, which is something Tom Garrett seems to never do. He doesn't think that people who voted differently than he does, or people that haven't, didn't vote for him, are his constituents. He doesn't show up at all. And I can tell you what else I won't do. I won't skip 15% of the vote like Tom Garrett has. Even on hard decisions, I'll show up and make a vote for the people of the 5th District.
Well, thanks, Andrew. I hate to interrupt this discussion, but we need to take another short break. You're listening to 94.7 WPBC, the Progressive Voice of Charlottesville, our election special interview with Andrew Snethern. And we're back. I'm Jeff Leonard, and I'm co-hosting with Bob McAdams a 94.7 WPBC election special interview with congressional candidate Andrew Snethern. Bob and Andrew, we have one more segment to talk about the issues.
And Andrew, because next year in Congress, some of the issues that you would face, maybe all of them, will be unpredictable. We have some general questions here just to get an idea of where you stand on things. And to start, here's a very general question. What do you see as the proper role of government?
Well, I think that the proper role, particularly in the House, is to be the voice of the people of the district. I think that because of gerrymandering, because of unlimited money in politics, we've gotten away from that a great deal. But my role and my hope would be that the people of the 5th District would have an advocate and a voice in Washington.
Now, every year in Congress, Congress is supposed to prepare a budget, but that process has been a mess for many years. What would be your budget priorities, and what changes to the tax law would you want enacted?
My budget priorities would be anything and everything that would benefit the middle class and working people. I really think that where we spend our resources, just generally speaking, if you look at our budget, is what we value. And so I would increase investment, in particular in the areas that I think that would result in the most jobs throughout our district, green energy, technology, and the trades. I also think that education should see a substantial increase as a percentage of our budget.
If you're increasing the budget in some places, where would you decrease the budget?
Well, I think that proper leadership in this arena would be to realize that we spend more on our Department of Defense than And the number changes from time to time. I hear anywhere from 9 to 12 of the countries below us combined. And so I think that would be a very reasonable place to look. And my thought on the Department of Defense and our defense budget isn't that we don't have to allocate substantial resources. I mean, certainly we do. I mean, it's critical. But we should do so. We shouldn't throw money at it and in a way that doesn't give us a great return on our investment. We expect that in other areas. We should expect that in the Department of Defense as well.
Now, Congress recently passed a tax law, and it is tilted heavily toward the wealthiest people and the wealthiest corporations. What changes would you make to the taxes?
Well, let me just first say that, again, that is because there's so much money in politics. Immediately after that budget was passed, the Koch brothers came out and said they were going to spend $400 million in the next cycle of elections. And that does not happen by accident. We've gotten to a system where it's better investment for corporations to purchase our Congress people than it is to reinvest in their businesses. And we have to get away from that. And that's one of the reasons I fought so hard to end gerrymandering. And so my priorities would be to ask that question again, the tail end of that, if you don't mind. I apologize.
we're looking at the tax bill that was passed by Congress this year at the end of last year. How would you change it to make the tax system more equitable?
Well, I think that the idea that if you reduce the tax on the largest corporations and the wealthiest individuals, and you expect them to turn around and then reinvest in the economy and all of those in the middle class, you have not paid attention to what happened over the last 40 years in this economy. And so my tax in budget and priorities would be to incentivize the behaviors we want to see. For example, if someone reinvests or starts a business like I have here in Charlottesville, a small business, but they do so particularly in the places in this district that have suffered job losses, that we give them a tax incentive for doing so. Those are the things I'd like to see in a tax plan.
You're listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, in our 5th District Congressional Candidate Forum. I'm Jeff Leonard, co-hosting with Bob McAdams, and with us in studio today is Andrew Sneetherin. Andrew, this is something we talk about every day here on the Progressive Voice, but Republicans have been using every trick possible to keep Democrats from getting elected. Sort of the sick joke is Democrats only have to win, they have to cover the spread. They're using gerrymandering, restrictive voter ID laws, voter purging rolls. What would you do? What action can Congress take to help protect everyone's vote, right to vote?
I think Congress could make it illegal to have political gerrymandering. Linda Perriello has endorsed me, and not the least of which is because she asked me to work on One Virginia 2021, and I think it's, honestly, if you look at the district we live in, Tom Garrett thinks that he can't be beaten because of gerrymandering. So he doesn't think he has to listen to the constituents. This is just one example of what you're talking about. And so ending political gerrymandering would be of paramount importance to me. Restrictive voter laws are just another way to avoid allowing people to vote, because the Republicans know that if people vote, they lose. And especially demographically speaking, over the next 20 years, if things continue the way they are, the Democratic Party is going to continue to grow its number, and the Republican Party, the only chance they have is to spend more money at it and keep more and more people from the polls, and that's what they're going to do. And so I think any laws that would prevent that are what Congress should be doing.
And Virginia 2021 is nonpartisan. I mean, they got Democrats and Republicans on there, correct?
Absolutely. And I think it has to be that way. And in fact, depending on the state where you are, it's Republicans that gerrymander districts or Democrats that gerrymander district. And honestly, I have said this from the beginning, if the Democrats, for example, in Virginia, at some point, we will take over the legislature and we turn around and do the same thing. What we have done is we have put our own political careers in front of what's best for this country, and I would not be a part of that.
I'm Jeff Leonard, and you're listening to 94.7 WPVC and our 5th District Congressional Candidate Forum. I'm here with Andrew Snyder and my co-host Bob McAdams. The voters sometimes write or call. I know I've tried to call our 5th District Representative to no avail. They feel frustrated when their letters or calls have no effect while lobbyists write health care insurance repeal and tax bills and on and on. What would you do to change the process to restore integrity to the House of Representatives?
Gosh, Frank, I mean, One Virginia 2021 and anti-gerrymandering is the paramount thing that I think has to happen. I myself have taken an oath that I won't seek more than 3 terms in this office. And I think that's particularly important as long as Citizen United is the law of the land and it's seen where money and politics is considered free speech. And so we have to reduce power in ways that we can. And that's one that we can do. Honestly, I look at Tom Garrett, and I don't know what he's doing. He's not showing up in Washington. He's not showing up here in the district. He's not honestly answering people's question. And I think it's primarily because he doesn't think he can be beaten.
You're listening to 94.7 WPVC's 5th District Congressional Candidate Forum. And with us today for an interview is Andrew Snethern. I'm Bob McAdams. Andrew, let's talk about getting elected. The 5th Congressional District goes from close to the Maryland border in the north and goes all the way to the border with North Carolina in the south. This district covers many medium markets. Now, if you're nominated, what is your strategy for winning the election in November, and how will you fund your campaign? Will you accept or reject contributions from Dominion Energy, for example, or any other corporation or corporate PACs?
First, I would not accept any money from corporate PACs. Let me get that out of the way. Dominion included, and I have taken oaths not to do that. And secondly, I think that the way you win this seat, particularly because of the way it's gerrymandered, is not just with money, although money is always important. I get that. We have to be able to get our message out there, particularly in the size of a district. But to do it just like Tom Perriello did, I am in my truck every single day driving to every rural part of this district and getting to know the people and the issues that are facing the people there. This is sort of, in my mind, a ground game. I am hiring people in places that already know the problems in those places and know the frustrations and know the needs of their community. And then we listen and we talk, and it's my job to get to every single part of this district. It's the reason every single day I'm leaving in the morning early and driving to rural parts and getting home late at night, because I believe that's the only way we win this district, and to talk about our progressive values everywhere. We cannot just talk about them in Charlottesville and Albemarle, where everybody or many, many people feel like we do. What we have to do is talk about our progressive values in every single part of this district, and that's on me. And that's on me to excite people and to talk about our shared values, because I believe when we talk about the shared values that we all have in common, we will win this district.
When you're talking to people, what do you tell them will be the first bill that you would like to submit as a representative to Congress?
One I have consistently said, I don't know if it would be a bill that I would submit, but I would sign on to Medicare expansion for everyone, because I think that is the place that harms the most people. I believe honestly that single payer will be the answer. As long as, if you think about it this way, it's not just the costs of health care, but it's the lost opportunity that people have that are when they're spending that money every month. And that is a drag on every single economy. I don't care if you're in the wealthiest part of this district or the poorest part of this district. That's why I think that is the number one issue that we have to deal with.
Now, in order to be elected in November, you first have to get the nomination. and the 5th Congressional District Democratic Committee vacillated on this for a while, but they have settled, and they're going to have a caucus convention system for nomination. What do you need to do to win the nomination in that context? And I think our listeners will need some education as to what this caucus convention thing looks like.
Okay, I'll try to give an education first, which is that every single jurisdiction, two cities and the rest of the counties throughout the district, will have their own caucuses, and each caucus, each jurisdiction, is allotted a certain number of delegates. When that delegation then goes on May the 5th, and votes at the convention for the candidate they'd like to see. So for me, this is a micro version of what it's going to take to win this district. This is a ground game. This is about exciting a base and actually motivating people to get up and go to the caucus and then later to the convention. I would like very much, for example, here in Albemarle, it's April the 16th, and in Charlottesville, it's April the 21st. If you go to our website, we'll have explanations, or the Democratic Party websites in those jurisdictions, they'll have explanations. My job is to excite people. My job is to go to all those places and get people to actually give of their time and show up.
So what's that website? You feel free. This is your hour. Feel free to give it out.
Andrew@sneetherinforcongress.com.
That's your email. So
that's my email.
Sneetherinforcongress.com.
Thank you very much, Jeff.
Oh, sure. So unfortunately, we've run out of time. Andrew, thanks so much for spending this hour with our 94.7 WPVC listeners. For the next in our series of election special interviews, Roger Dean Hufstetler, will be here to join us in the studio. So tune in next Saturday for another election special interview. Thanks for listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.
You've been listening to the 94.7 WPVC Election Special Candidates Forum. The program is underwritten by the Daily Progress with support from Rebecca's Natural Food and Hamilton's at First and Main. Join us again next Saturday at 11 as we talk to yet another candidate for the Democratic nomination for 5th District U.S. Congressperson. You can also suggest questions for the candidates at 947WPVC.org.